You're listening to the EWN Podcast Network.
Welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl, a community and education platform that empowers parents and caretakers to foster independence, leadership, and strong personal identity in girls so they can change the world. Now, here is the founder and your host, Maria Fuller.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl. I'm the founder and your host, Maria Fuller. Today, we're going to talk about money, money, and more money. Money was never really something that I talked about as a child or, heck, even as a young adult. For the most part, I never really wanted to think about money. And if I did, it was never really in a great way. Typically, when I thought about money as a child or a young adult, it was always from a place of lack, not one of abundance. As an entrepreneur for the last 10 years and working with many small businesses run by women, I've learned that a large problem in running my business in the early years was this fear about talking about money, but even more so this fear or the negative feelings associated when I was talking about money. One of the biggest problems I see with women entrepreneurs and even women intrapreneurs, those working inside of large corporations, is that this unhealthy belief system and this fear about having conversations about money has not only held back their businesses and their careers, but their bottom line. And it's really played a huge role in their self-esteem and their self-confidence. Or is it that their self-confidence and their self-esteem plays a role in their unhealthy beliefs around money? From day one, I knew that I wanted to have open conversations with my girls about money. And while I wanted them to have a life of abundance regarding money, I still wanted them to have a healthy respect for it and appreciation for the value and the power that it holds. It's a tricky subject, really, and there's such a fine line to whether or not we can teach them these lessons. I think the first step is acknowledging and understanding that these are such critical lessons that we need to teach our girls. That we need to stop skirting around conversations about money, and we need to start thinking about how we can start teaching them the power and the responsibility that comes with money and how to embrace it with a healthy attitude. I'm so excited to welcome our guest on the show today, Deborah Daniel. Deborah is a CPA with over 25 years as an entrepreneur who runs a multi-million dollar company. She's a mother to a son and a daughter. Through the lens of money and business, she guides entrepreneurs and individuals to change their money mindset and build their money muscles so that they can have the life that they only think is beyond their highest expectations. By having a clear money plan and developing the money muscles needed to make the attraction and accumulation of money second nature, her clients are able to have success in their finances. But the success doesn't stop there. It continues into other areas, which she considers to be the four pillars of success: money, relationships, health, and time. And they are all intertwined. She's a firm believer that we really can have it all. We may just not be able to have it all at the same time. Small, consistent steps towards your goal will bring huge success in all areas of your life. And by helping her clients to find their money blocks, their limiting beliefs that won't allow them to have mega success that they deserve, and the money leaks in their current money situation, she's able to significantly change people's financial future. Today, Deborah will be joining me on an enlightening conversation on how to start having these conversations and giving us some action items that we can take to start to begin to develop a healthy relationship with money with our girls. So my guest today is Deborah Daniel. Deborah, welcome. I'm so glad to have you here today.
Hey, I'm so glad to be here. I'm really excited.
So tell me a little bit about yourself, what you do, and let's start talking about money.
Okay, great. That's my favorite topic. To me, you need to know who you're really talking to and where they're, why does it make sense for me even to talk to you about money, right? I'm a 25-year entrepreneur. I wouldn't be a very good employee, I don't think, anymore. And my whole career has been centered around business, finance, and money. And really, my clients and myself figure out, what is this whole money thing? Because it's not intuitive. It's not, okay, we're not born knowing what to do with money. We're not born knowing how to have a relationship with money. And it's really kind of important to have that relationship, I think, because, you know, we hear so many things, we're programmed with so many things, and there's research that shows that our money attitudes are formed by the time we're 7 years old because of something that we've heard, you know, things that we've heard as a child, how we, you know, money, you've heard all the same things. Money is the root of all evil, or, you know, rich people are bad, or, you know, it just depends on what family you came from, you know, what you're getting those attitudes from your past, right? And from the messaging that we get on the TV and on TV shows and on commercials and everywhere that we go. And the sad fact is, if you think of money in that way, you're never going to really be able to attain it and control it yourself and use it for the tool that it should be.
Yeah, so that's really interesting because, you know, as an entrepreneur myself for years, I've been hearing about this concept of money mindset and having, you know, a healthy relationship and love for money. And I think when raising my two girls, I've had this idea or kind of almost fear in how do I raise her to have a healthy love and appreciation for money starting at an early age, because I don't want to put those ideas in her head. And, you know, my oldest right now is really starting to have this awareness of money, and I don't ever want her to feel like there's a lack of, but I want her to learn that I make choices in how I use my money. So how do we start at a young age? What are some things that we need to be conscious about when discussing money, especially with, you know, little ones, if we're saying that, you know, a lot of the imprinting is done before the age of seven?
You know, I think that's really a great question. And I think a lot of it goes back to always treating it as a tool, always explaining kids need to know from a very early age that things don't just come because we want them, that there's an earning to it. One of my things that I say in my money manifesto, that money that is earned is always valued more so than money that is gotten in any other way. I mean, obviously our children can't earn money, you know, from the minute that they, but when we teach them that there is a cause and effect, that like, okay, we can do that if we do this, or if we make this other choice, but never making it about, you know, well, I think we want to give them that sense of abundance from a very early age instead of the sense of lack, because that does really impact people. It impacts, I see it across the board, not just with women, but especially with women business owners being unable to charge what they're really worth because they have this feeling that there's always scarcity. And that goes along, that starts at a very early age. I see children, you know, exhibiting the lack mentality, you know, that it's not all there. There's not so much out there that if I have it, then somebody else can't have it. And that's really not true. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. And, you know, I think my struggle right now is that we have I've provided such a sense of abundance of money with them right now that we're also at that place where we're like, well, we can just buy it. And yeah, we can just buy it, but I want them to still have like that appreciation for making a choice of where our money goes to.
And so, well, I think we can give kids a chance really early on of choices. Okay, if we have this thing today, we may not go to Disney until next year. You know, it's not that we can't do everything. There is abundance, but we can't have everything all the time, right? And so I think giving them that choice of, you know, I have a bucket, there's a bucket of money that we have, and we could go out and get more of it, but we can't spend out more than we have. And I think that goes into a little bit, understanding debt at a very early age is, I think, important. I don't think people talk to their kids about debt, and they don't understand, they see us swiping credit cards, and they don't understand that that's not like just free money, right? That there really is, you know, we have to pay that down the way, right? And understanding that there is good debt and there's bad debt. You know, mom and dad wouldn't be able to have this house if we had to save up all the money, you know, and pay cash for it, right? So we're paying this over time, but so that we can have this great house, maybe today we're not going to go, you know, to Chuck E. Cheese again for the fifth time this week.
Yeah, I love that. I love that concept of explaining to them about good debt and bad debt. I really never even thought about it that way, right? Like any credit card I swipe, she thinks that's just our money. Where in reality, it's sometimes my money if it's coming out of the checking, right? But if I'm swiping a credit card, that's money that technically I'm borrowing that I need to pay that back. So what's a good way, do you think, to kind of explain that concept? You know, if I say I'm trying to talk to, you know, second to fourth grade girl, how do we explain that concept of debt, and good debt and bad debt? So explain that to me. What is good debt? What is bad debt?
Okay. And that's a little, I mean, we want to start laying the groundwork at an early age, but it makes a little more sense as they get big, as they get older, I think too. I mean, and when I, especially I'm talking to adults, but I think we can, most kids understand a lot more than we think they do. You know, I mean, I've always talked to my children the same way that I would talk to you in a conversation. And sometimes you have to explain the words sometimes, mm-hmm. but they do get the concepts, I think. But to me, the ultimate decision, the definition of good debt versus bad debt is good debt is leveraging, just like we want to leverage our time and be able to be more productive, is taking this amount of money for something that's going to be worth more to us down the way, a house particularly, or an investment, you know, a car we need, that's a necessity. So good debt to do that is good. But, you know, if you can't afford another item that isn't a necessity, you know, you don't want to pay interest on a shirt that you buy on sale just so you can have the shirt. And it's not so much on sale if you take 6 months to pay it off, right? And you pay interest on it. And I think explaining to them the concept of interest is always interesting as well. I mean, because I don't think that they get that. A funny story about money that I used to explain to my daughter one time, she wanted to buy something. It was like a Learning Express. I don't even know if they're still around anymore, but it was kind of an educational toy, but it was $9.99. And so she gave her dad $10, and he said, oh, well, wait, you owe me 39 more cents. And she's like, no, it's $9.99. You owe me a penny. And he's like, no, well, there's sales tax. She says, I don't know what that sales tax is. It doesn't sound good. And I don't think it's for kids. But it's good to let them know early on, you know, there are things that we're paying for. I mean, if we want to have a safe place to live, we've got to contribute, you know, through taxes and stuff like that.
I love that. I really love that concept, is really like breaking it down and going through it with them. You know, maybe when we hit the grocery store, looking at the receipt together and seeing, mm-hmm. you know, where the money went and how it totaled up to be, you mm-hmm. know, $138 for this week's groceries, and, you know, where the taxes and all of that comes from, right? Bottle deposits. When we bought a couple of cans of seltzer the other day, and Aria was like, What's this? They're charging you more money. And I was like, well, remember when we give our cans actually to my mother's school because the kids return the cans and use that money for their field trip at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, they add on that extra money so that we bring the cans back for recycling. It kind of gives people an incentive to bring them back. It's good for the earth. And she was like, oh, well, that's interesting. Right. And you know, mm-hmm. an interesting way of explaining that.
Well, that's exciting what you say though, because that really is a good example of using money as a tool. That the fact that you get that 5 cent deposit, or I don't know what the deposit is these days. We don't do that down in the South, but I remember I lived in Connecticut and we did that. That's an incentive. We are using money. The powers that be are using money as a tool to encourage behavior that we want to be encouraged. That's a healthy use of money versus, you know, some of the less healthy ways people look at money.
Awesome. Yeah, totally. So one thing that you talked about earlier is about in your money manifesto is that money earned is money that's valued. Now in my house, typically I don't give my children an allowance. You know, the way I've brought them up is that we do things in our home to help each other because we're teamwork, community, family, and this and that. But at the same time, I've kind of always wondered, I wonder if I should start implementing some type of task-oriented list that if she completes certain tasks, she earns something for it, so that we start instilling that value of working for the money. And what do you feel about that? What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's really important, because I will tell you, even though money is kind of my topic, it is something that I feel like sometimes my biggest lessons have been in things that I didn't tell my kids the right way to do. I think, because we all have a different money story. We all, you know, how we handle our money is a lot, like I said, dependent on how we were raised. But I was able to give my kids a lot of stuff that I wasn't able to have as growing up. And so we didn't give them an allowance. And so sometimes my daughter, even right now, I'll say, hey, will you help me do this project or whatever? And she's like, well, I don't really need any money. I'm like, okay, well, I obviously missed the boat on this one myself, but I've worked with lots of clients that definitely use money with their children to teach them how to budget. And they have a big component of giving. I know one of my clients 10% of what their allowance is, they give to their, you know, they give to charity. And I think that's a great lesson. When you're getting a video game, when my kids want a video game, and that is a luxury thing, and I do make them either pay with their gift money, they get money that they've gotten from a gift. And we did instill finally an allowance. I couldn't think of what we were calling it, an allowance. They do value it more. The stuff that they get, if they've paid for it, they're a lot more careful with it. You know, they're a lot more sorrowful if it's broken. You know, it's not a matter of, oh, let's just go buy another one. You know, they do get the concept when they see that they've put some effort into it. I see it just not even with children, but it's just across the board. There's so many examples. It's kind of, it goes back to the give a man a fish he eats today, teach a man to fish he, you know, eats forever, is universal. You see example after example after example of it. Because if we just give people a hand, I mean, I'm totally with charity and I totally believe that there's a place for that. But the problem is, do we solve the problem if we don't teach them how to do it? It goes back to, you know, there's a crazy statistic of how many people that win the lottery actually go bankrupt within 3 years. It's because they didn't earn it. They don't value it. They blow it. They don't have the mindset for it because it wasn't like, oh, well, I had to work for 20 years to get this money. So I think kids get that right away. And I think it is good to have them pay for certain little things that they want themselves.
Yeah, I love that. And something that you talked about briefly was about charitable giving. And, you know, this is a topic that actually came up for me recently because I was talking to a woman entrepreneur and, you know, both of us are actually managing directors for eWomen Network. And, you know, our mission is to help, you know, 1 million women entrepreneurs earn $1 million or more in net revenue a year and live fulfilled lives. And when I said that to her, the first thing she did was put her hands up in front of me and say, you know, like, stop. Oh, I don't need to earn $1 million. And I looked at her and I said, well, why not? And she said, well, I don't need all of that stuff. And I said, okay, I get that. I said, but if you had, you know, $1 million that you were earning a year and you had surplus, what are some amazing things that you could do with that surplus? How else could you help others with that money? And so when you talked about like charitable giving and how, you know, some of your clients have children put away a certain amount of money towards like, you know, philanthropical endeavor and charitable giving, you know, to me, that's something that's important. My children go to a nonprofit school and we talk a lot about charitable giving. And I think that's a really amazing way for girls to start thinking about leadership, which is really important. What are your thoughts on this concept of charitable giving and the value that there is in that?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. The thing is, that's a subject that just what you said, oh, I don't need $1 million. To me, and this is kind of bold, I almost think it's our moral obligation to earn as much money as we possibly can, be that 1 million, 1 billion, 1 trillion. That would be great, wouldn't it? In an ethical way, obviously. I mean, we're not, you know, we want to make sure we're earning, there's some energy there if you're not doing it with integrity, but as much as you possibly can, because you can't be of influence to your, in your family, of impact in your family, in your community, in the world, if you can't keep your lights on, right? I mean, so it's not a matter of self, I think, and that comes back to money attitudes. What you said, I don't need all that money. I don't need all that stuff. That's because of this crazy rich is bad, you know, money is evil, attitudes that so many have, that it's so pervasive. The thing is, if we truly use it as, I want to get it as much as I can so I can spread it to as many people as I can, doesn't that change the whole conversation?
I mean, yeah, it really does. And that's what I was trying to, you know, explain to her. And that's what I try to explain to, you know, my daughters when they're talking about, oh yeah, you're going to go to work, you know, because my oldest will explain to my little one, because my little one still kind of has that attachment. Like when I'm leaving, you know, mommy's going to work, she gets upset. And, you know, I really try to instill a couple of things to my girls, that I work because the work that I do is amazing and fulfills my heart and I love what I do. But at the same time, that the money that I earn allows me to give to them amazing things. But I also tell them that the money that I earn allows me to do amazing things, because it mm-hmm. you know, I say it helps me with your school, so I can give to your school. Or, you know, when we talk about a Christmas time, there's some families out there that don't have as much as us, we're able to go and buy toys for them, or or, mm-hmm. you know, give to, you know, our Memorial Day parade. We have a food pantry and we went to the grocery store and we, you know, filled up bags of food for the food pantry that we paid for to help those families in need. So mommy works and daddy works because it allows us to give you amazing things, but it allows us to help our community and the things that we love and that we believe in, because money is that tool that we need to help further things along.
Exactly. Exactly. And it is a tool. And I think it's really especially important for our girls to understand that. A funny thing that I see, it's just kind of crazy. We're in the 21st century, but women still defer so many of the money decisions to the man in the household. It's pervasive. And I see this because, you know, I do taxes is one of my main businesses is I do accounting and taxes. And even when the woman is the primary breadwinner in the family, is the one that, you know, just because of whatever her job is, she makes more money than her husband, which I'm totally cool with. I think it's all a group effort, right? They still let the husband have a lot of say in where the money is really spent, which, and I'll even say, maybe I even might continue the craziness of that as well, because when I do people's tax returns, I always put the husband's name first. I mean, because on the return, it's the taxpayer and the spouse. Yeah. I mean, to me, the woman is always the spouse. It has nothing to do with the earnings portion of it. I'm thinking just more in a family. I don't know. That's just the way I look at it. But there really are attitudes out there where we're not taking ownership of the money. The women are not taking ownership of the money, I think. And yeah. We really want our girls to learn that right away, that you're an equal partner in this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that you brought that up. It's so funny because I actually had this conversation with my husband the other day, right? Because, you know, he works for another company and I run an LLC business. And so when we file our taxes, the LLC is filed as an addendum to our personal taxes, but our accountant put him down as the primary. So when I went in, because I needed to go in and pay some tax stuff, I don't know if I was going through my state account or through my federal account, he was listed as the primary and they wouldn't talk to me and I had to pay a business tax. And I was like, but I own the company. And they're like, you're not the primary. And I was so angry about that I didn't even have access to that, because that's how we were set up. And it's a frustration to me because I want that ownership. And I'm very lucky that I have a partnership with my husband where we look at money very equally, and mm-hmm. the way we control money in our home is very equal. And while in many ways my heart, I have a very old fashioned romantic heart where I still love my husband to open the doors for me when we go into restaurants and stuff like that, I still love the power of when the check comes, I like to pick up the check and he loves mm-hmm. it. And I have a funny story because, you know, my little one Aria, when she was about 2, we were out to dinner one night as a family and the waitress came over and she was a female. And I looked at her and I said, you know, can we have the check please? And, you know, I'm trying to clean up the kids and stuff. And she goes and gets the check and she brings it back and she puts it in front of my husband. And
of course,
in front of her, I grab the book, I open my wallet, I take out my card, I put it in, I give it back to her. And she goes and she runs it and she comes back and she goes to place it in front of my husband. And my 2-year-old looks at her and goes, mommy paid. And she starts tapping the table in front of me, like, put the check down here, mommy paid. And the girl just looked at me and put it down in the middle of the table. Mm-hmm. And it was an eye opener to me that it's like, she almost had a hard time giving me back the book. Like maybe she thought my husband would get angry or be insulted that I didn't give her back the checkbook. But it's important for me to show my girls that mommy can pick up the check too, because, you know, I hear stories of some of my friends that are, you know, dating now and stuff like that. And there's a couple lessons that we're teaching our girls when we do something like that. We're teaching them to own their money. And, you know, I want them to, when they're dating one day, if they're going out on that first date and stuff, to not expect the man to pay, to, you know, go in Dutch, you know, together, or to pay. And I want her to find a partner that's okay with her paying and that's going to see her as that equal, mm-hmm. you know, and it's such a simple thing to do, but it shows so much about the, you know,
that
power of women.
It's so funny that you say that, because I was just thinking about the paying the check thing right before you said it, about how they always hand the check to the man. They always do. I mean, almost always I pay the bill as well, just because it's easier for me to get my, I mean, it's easier for me to get it out of my wallet than for my husband to take it out of his back pocket. It's just coming right out of my purse. And logistically, we literally, all of our stuff is together. It doesn't matter. It's coming from the same place, but the waitress always puts it, you know, in front of the woman. It's just, it baffles me that we still pervade, but it's also an interesting thing that you said about the dating thing. I mean, I've been married for 25 years, so that's so far in my past, but I have a son who is a freshman in college and has had a couple of girlfriends along the way. And it was funny to me, just because of the way I think about money, you know, that still here we are in the 21st century. And so we were footing all of their, because my son didn't really have that much money. I mean, so my husband and I were basically paying for all of the activities for my son and his girlfriend because she was the girl. I mean, that seems a little weird to me as a person who feels like it's equal in the family.
Right. And at the same time, it's like you have this conversation with your son, you know, what kind of relationship are you looking for? And when mm-hmm. you're always the one, and I still think it's okay if a man on the first date wants to pick up the bill, that's great.
Oh, but yeah. Dating, but not for two, you know, years all the time.
Yeah. You know, at some point it's like, it's almost like she's being, I don't want to say she's being disempowered, but I feel like if he doesn't open up and say, do you want to cover some of it? You know, it's like she's on for the ride, and that's not healthy either for her mm-hmm. as mm-hmm. a girl. And maybe is it because she doesn't want to pay, or she doesn't have to pay, or has she been so brainwashed to think that if she tries to be assertive and want to pay for something, does she think she's going to be, you know, demasculating him, or is he going to feel that way? Right. Because for women, even more than men, it's hard to have this conversation about money and to mm-hmm. talk about the money. So she right. might even feel so like, oh my God, I can't even bring it up because he's going to dump me or think I'm weird. Right. With that, you know, so where is that coming from? You know, is it society? Is it her? Or, you know,
exactly. I think you're so right about that, because it is, I mean, it would probably be a little weird for her to say something about it, or even for him. And it comes right back down to that, to those conversations of, you know, but I think you're right. It does take a little bit, the power away a little bit, because a person who pays has the power a lot of the time. I mean, and that's the truth about money. I mean, and power isn't bad, you know, I mean, power just means who's the decision maker a lot of the time. Right. And I don't think that that's really bad, but it's odd that we still are in that. So many things still have a very masculine tint to them. But something else you said that was interesting is, me being empowered, you being empowered as a woman, does not mean that we have to emasculate our men. You know what exactly. I'm saying? I loved what you said about you still like to have the door opened and stuff like that. And I think that that's really true. We don't have to be, we're not trying to be androgynous. We're not trying to be that men and women are exactly the same. You know, I mean, there's certain things, you know, that you still want to be treated like a woman. I mean, there's certain things you want to be, I think money should be something that is very much a gender neutral subject.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thank you, Deborah, so much for your time. It was so great to have you. I hope our listeners picked up some great ideas and insights along the way. To find out more about Deborah, you can visit her at deborahdaniel.com. To hear the rest of this interview with even more tips and insights, please join our community at raisingapowerfulgirl.com. We look forward to seeing you there.
Thanks for joining us. This is the EWN Podcast Network.
You are a leader and a role model to developing girls. Whether you're raising a daughter or you work with girls on a daily basis, you see the incredible potential they have to make a difference in this world. You know the change we need is going to come from them, and you want to make sure they grow up to be independent leaders with a strong sense of personal identity, because these are the traits that make a powerful girl. So come join our community and education platform at raisingapowerfulgirl.com. And become a part of our movement to educate, inspire, and cultivate a generation of powerful girls with eye-opening discussions and facts, exercises, and tangible calls to action. We can't wait to see you there.
Have you ever asked yourself this question? Why is it so hard to make a buck? I know I have. Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. What I have discovered after going from the brink of bankruptcy to running a multi-million dollar award-winning business is this. You can't build a million dollar dream hanging around minimum wage mindsets. My mission is 1 million women entrepreneurs generating $1 million in annual revenue. So here's what I've done. I've created the mother of all entrepreneur success programs that you can access online on your time. It's called Monetize Me Now. It's a 7-module online course that is 100% my success formula, covering mindset, mission, management, motivation, marketing, and measure. Come on, take my hand and I'll show you the way to learn to earn flowing revenue for your business. Visit monetizemenow.com for details.